everyone, and welcome to episode 65 of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. We have another bite-sized episode now to tide you over on the long, sad wait before season 4. We hope that you're all surviving and, dealing with the situation, and we thought we'd bring you a bit of lighthearted fun and joy after our last episode about crushing death and murder and violence. So this episode is about everyone's favourite coach, Orny Adams, who plays Coach Finstock on the show, and his career as a stand-up comedian, basically. So Orny Adams was selling his DVD at ByteCon. Orny Adams Takes the Third, which I believe was a television special put onto DVD. And, you know, he does stand-up gigs that a lot of the Teen Wolf fans have been to, but was a stand-up comedian before that. And we have a special guest with us today to kind of teach us a bit more about the life of Orny Adams. And that special guest is not Orny Adams, sadly. You will hear a little from him at the end of this episode. But, you know, almost as good as Orny Adams, we have Danielle Cassidy with us. And Karen and I, obviously. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Had Danielle on as our first ever contest winning fan contributor guest back a million years ago. And we, as we were speaking about, like, you know, with ByteCon, when we were talking about that with Katie last week, she was one of the people we mentioned. We had never, you know, met Danielle, and we sort of knew her from the competition and then, you know, Twitter. But then she was at ByteCon, and now we're all friends and we know each other, and she contributed to our live podcast and we all hung out and it was great. So hello, Danielle.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. I like that you mentioned that I contributed to the live podcast, because it wasn't so much a contribution as I just ran up and started talking.
No, it was great. I got kind of teary-eyed some of the stuff that you said. It was really good.
Yes, but Karen got Danielle to write us basically a college paper about the history of Orny Adams. No, not quite. But no, she really knows a lot about his career. So we thought we'd come on. We both bought the DVD at ByteCon from Orny, and so we thought we'd come on and talk about that and his kind of career trajectory and how he has ended up where he is and what he kind of does. So that's cool. If you are not yet familiar with our social media, you can reach us on Twitter, which is NATWpodcast, or on email, which is natwpodcast@gmail.com. We have an Instagram, which should be coming back to life in a few days when some of our girls get together, though I'm still probably going to post ByteCon throwback pictures till the end of time on there, which is also NATWpodcast. And our Tumblr, which is our pride and joy, is the full term Not Another Teen Wolf podcast @tumblr.com or .tumblr.com, however you type a Tumblr address, whatever. You know, we try and put everything up over there. So if you're not following that, I'm not going to lie, you probably are following that because it has way more followers than anything else that we do. So, yes, Danielle, do you have a fandom Twitter and Tumblr that you talk Teen Wolf on at all?
Yeah, my Tumblr is West Wingman. it's from Veep. And my Twitter handle is Skittish Kid, which is literally how it sounds, which creepily is the Instagram handle of the actor Scott Porter.
Okay.
But I talk about all the fandoms on everything, so.
Hang on, do you follow me?
If anybody's interested.
You yes. Follow me, yes. And you just favorited my tweet about Mark Ruffalo's Tumblr.
Yes.
I have not noticed your handle whatsoever. So did you recently change your handle?
I did. It was
okay.
I knew it.
Yeah. All right. Yes. I'm like, hang on. I know I follow her. I know she follows me. That's not the handle I know. Sorry. Anyway, yes, I understand. Okay.
So basically, yeah, everybody knows who Orny Adams is. He plays Coach, and his Twitter is @OrnyAdams, and I'm going to say his bio because it's absolutely hilarious, but it says overnight sex symbol thanks to MTV Teen Wolf. Teen Choice Award winner for Hardest Nipples, First Love stand-up comedy. And I feel like that perfectly describes exactly who he is.
Pretty much to a T.
Yeah. So, okay, Danielle, tell us a bit about what he's done as a comedian so far.
He started, I believe, his start was writing for Jay Leno when he was hosting The Tonight Show. And he appeared several times on The Tonight Show and The Late Show with David Letterman. And he wrote for the comedian Gary Shandling, and they're actually really good friends still. And he keeps in touch with a lot of the people that he used to work for. He's still really good friends with a lot of them. But his actual, like, I guess his, like, launch into comedy was the documentary Comedian, which was highlighting Jerry Seinfeld's career in comedy, because he started as a stand-up comic, and then that bled into the Seinfeld show. And Orny was supposed to be set, he and Jerry Seinfeld are really good friends, and he was set as the foil to Jerry Seinfeld. You know, here's this comedian who hit it big, and here's this comedian who's still struggling. And Orny, you know, he was very honest in the film because it was a documentary, but it had a negative reaction from a lot of the people who went to see it. So everybody saw him as this, like, whiny, kind of egotistical guy, and a lot of people thought he was just plain jealous of Seinfeld. And so he used to have the moniker of the most hated comedian.
Huh. That's so sad.
Yeah, but I mean, he's turned it around since then for a lot of people, but that was definitely, like, what catapulted him into people knowing who he was.
Yeah, I can't say I'd really heard of him before Teen Wolf, though I'm not that familiar with the American comedy scene. I'm much, much more familiar with the British comedy scene. But I find it interesting, like, saying, like, the idea of being, like, a comedy writer, like what you're saying for, like, Leno and other comedians, like, do you know anything about how that worked, about how those shows work? Do the hosts not actually just make up what they say? Like, how does that stuff work?
Usually what it's very similar to Saturday Night Live. Oh, some of it is improv because they are comedians, but they do have a basic script for, like, the monologues or the intros for introducing the certain person, or somebody will write a funny joke for them to ask this person that's going to get a big laugh out of the crowd.
Okay. But are they not, like, celebrity interview shows? Like, are they actually more comedy-based shows? I'm not actually super familiar with...
Leno would do, like, a 10 to 15-minute monologue sometimes.
Okay,
to start his show. And then he would do the interviews then, and then there'd be a musical performance at the end.
Okay. I've never really thought about that, about television presenters... like, not just winging it, if you know what I mean. Like, not just, you know, not just saying sort of what happens. But that's cool. And I can kind of imagine the film, the Jerry Seinfeld situation. I think I have heard of the film, but did not know Orny was in it. And I can imagine how that came across. But also, would people not think that if he was, like, being included in the film and shown, like, that it would be obvious that him and Jerry Seinfeld were friends, if you know what I mean?
That's the funny thing about it, is there's an interview from sometime last year, actually, which Orny is now more famous. He has a bigger fan base, thanks to Teen Wolf. And they mentioned the movie, and he refers to it as a shadow that passes over his career. It just comes and goes.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it's weird to him because he remembers seeing the movie in theaters with Jerry Seinfeld. They went together to see this movie because they're such good friends. And when Takes the Third aired on Comedy Central, Jerry Seinfeld called him up and gave him an hour's worth of feedback, you know, compliments, critiques. They just talked back and forth for an hour about his show because he's such a fan of Orny's.
Yeah, you'd think if Jerry Seinfeld was choosing someone to be, like, in his... you know, film or whatever, he's not going to, like, literally give publicity to someone who hates him and who he hates.
Right.
Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. But, I don't know, man. It's quite strange. But...
it's America.
Yeah. But obviously we know from, you know, interviews from Jeff and from Orny that he actually never intended to act, that Jeff literally just came in and was like, I'm a fan of yours and I want you to do this role on my show. But you say he also never intended to be a comedian either, is that right?
Yeah, he talked about it a little bit at BiteCon. He mentioned that his parents sent him to a really good school. He has a degree in political science and philosophy, and he was intending to be a lawyer, and he still thinks he'd be really good at it if he was a lawyer. But he says,
can you imagine that though?
Kind of, yeah.
I just keep picturing him saying, you're out of order.
Yeah.
I think like his closing arguments would be gold.
Yeah. I now want him to play a lawyer on like a, I want him to be the slightly crazy person in like a dramatic law show. Like,
yes. He should be on like The Good Wife.
Yeah.
But he in an interview, he said he went on a trip to Europe and he was in Florence, Italy, which I found interesting because Florence is a big artistic hub of the world.
Yeah.
And he said when he saw the people there and how they were all doing all these different things and none of them were capitalists, they were just doing things that they loved. They didn't care about the money. That was when he realized that he didn't have to do some high-paying job because it's what's expected. He could just do what he loved to do. And so he decided to be a comedian because that's what he loved.
That's nice. I mean, I'm assuming he had some interest in it. He didn't just discover that.
Yeah.
But he didn't think he could pursue it.
He could do it.
That's cool. That's very nice. Yeah, I believe Florence is actually the home of, like, Commedia dell'arte, which is, like, one of the founding forms of comedy, like one of the very historical forms of acting in comedy. So that's kind of nice as well. But yeah.
Florence has always been like a center of the art world. And yeah, I can totally imagine him going there and just looking around and being inspired by it. I've been there and it's like one of the most beautiful places that I've ever been to. And so I think it's really cool that he just decided, like, you know, because that's really hard for some people to be like, no, I don't need to take this high-paying job. I'm going to do exactly what I want to do and be happier for it, even though it's going to be a struggle. And I think a lot of artists, whether they're writers or comedians or actors or singers, you know, that's something that a lot of people have to come to terms with, that it's a struggle, but it's also going to be probably the happiest that you're ever going to be in your life. And so for somebody to go from wanting, well, I don't know if he necessarily wanted to be a lawyer, but from being on that career path to choosing comedy, I think is really amazing.
It is cool. Do you know a bit more about than what I said about him actually getting Teen Wolf? Because he'd never done like scripted acting roles.
He was doing a show and Jeff happened to be there and he was in the middle of casting Teen Wolf. And he couldn't figure out what he wanted for the Coach Finstock character. And so he, I guess, was just in the area and he figured, I'll go to this comedy show. It was an improv show. And he said, I'll go to this comedy show and see what's up. And he instantly loved Orny's, like, magnetism. And he approached him and he said, listen, I'm doing this show called Teen Wolf for MTV. I want you to play the coach. If you're interested, give me a call. And that was that. There was no audition process. He just said, I want you.
And I think Orny at BiteCon was something like his agent was going to call Jeff back and be like, yeah, we'll audition or something like that. And Orny's like, no.
Tell them I'm getting on the plane.
Yeah. Tell them I'll be in Atlanta on Monday.
Yep. And he's the only one that never auditioned for the show, which is really cool. And I mean, I don't know if it was necessarily Jeff's vision to have Orny's personality and Coach's personality to be so close, but I think that it works so perfectly because the coach in the show is, although he's similar to the one in the movie, I think the one in the movie is toned down a bit. And I think that Coach in the show works so, so well. And I cannot imagine anyone else being able to pull it off the way that Orny does. Yeah. He's so good at it.
And every moment where he's kind of not being crazy also comes across as, like, really genuine. Like, the coach in the movie is, he isn't as loudly crazy, but he says really, really terrible things, and then some of the, like, and he kind of feels like he's, like, he gives the guys, like, really bad advice and stuff. Like, he's terrible, basically, even though he's toned down. And this manages to have the same humor, but into a really positive character, and that's something really cool as well.
Yeah, I think the difference is that although they're both used as comedic relief, I think in the movie it's a lot more hollow. Like, it's literally there for the laughs. He doesn't really have a lot of substance. But in the show, especially in season 3B, when we kind of saw a sneak peek into a little bit of his relationships with other characters and possibly his history, we got a lot of substance there and a lot of depth to the character. And I think that's something that the show and Orny as an actor, they're just doing really well.
Yeah, and for someone who hadn't acted in, you know, a dramatic capacity or, like, a, you know, a scripted capacity before, the moments of sincerity are so good. Not even just the, you know, the season 3B stuff where it's really serious. Even the opening, I think one of the opening scenes at the parent-teacher conference, I've seen this going around on Tumblr a bit recently, where he's talking to Sheriff about Styles. You know, and he's kind of like, the way that he talks about Styles shows that he is a really good teacher that cares about his kids, and, like, you know, he doesn't automatically write, you know, the crazy ones off as useless and stuff. He's like, you know, great kid, very smart, you know, doesn't apply himself, and he's very legit as a teacher, despite how crazy he is as a coach. And I always love that, and I'm always surprised that it can be done so well, you know, when he is so crazy at other times. And the fact that he had no acting experience, I don't know if that kind of helps the situation even, because he's just being genuine, he's not overdoing it, or if it's just, you know, super lucky or whatever, but it comes across so well, and it's so impressive.
Yeah, and I think the question that you asked him at BiteCon was if he thought Coach was a good teacher. And I really liked his answer, because he basically said, yeah, Coach is the one that you go to when you have a problem. Mm. And he felt that way with his coach when he was younger, and he wanted this coach to be really similar. And I think that shows really well that, yeah, he's loud and crazy, but he cares. And if you have a problem, he's going to be there for you.
Mm. I had, like, no recollection of that question until you just mentioned it, because I remember how it went from this cute, sweet thing to him saying that he wanted Coach to give Styles the sex talk.
Oh, yes. God. Yeah.
Oh, he was gold at BiteCon. He said so many amazing things.
Mm. Yeah, and really nice things, too. Like, he took it from ridiculous to genuine pretty fluently, which is a nice thing, which is something that I kind of want to go back to when we actually talk about his stand-up, because his style, at least from the DVD, is a certain way, and I'm curious to see what he'd be like if he did a more story-based, like, or self-deprecating comedy as opposed to, like, joke-based comedy. You know how some comedians, kind of, their comedy show is very internal-based rather than kind of based on jokes around them, and I'd be curious to see what he came out with in that circumstance based on, like, I don't know, what he thinks about himself and stuff, because I liked a lot of the stuff he said at BiteCon. So anyway, we'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
But yes.
I think one of the things that I really noticed at BiteCon too was, like, I mean, on stage, he said this before too in other places, but on stage, like, he feels really comfortable and he plays with the crowd really well. But one-on-one, he's a little bit more shy. And I kind of noticed that, too, when we were talking to him and everything. But I think it's really interesting how somebody can just get up on stage and light up like that. And he gets so into his routines and his comedy, and it's so good. You can just tell, like, he lives off of that interaction with people. And you have a really interesting story here, Danielle, about one of his encounters being on stage in front of a lot of people. So can you tell us about that?
Yes, this is one of my favorite stories I've ever read about him. He was talking about, he was doing this show one night, and it was supposed to be this really small venue, But it's this old theater, and he mentioned it's a theater where guys like Chaplin used to go and do stuff, and so he's really excited to do this show. And he's in the green room, and he's preparing, and in walks Robin Williams. And he kind of, you know, he has that moment of, oh, he's a bigger star than me. I should offer him the stage. And so he asks him, do you want to get up on stage? Do you want to go first? And Robin Williams looks at him and he goes, no, why don't you go? If I decide I want to, I'll go on after you. And so he goes out, he does his whole bit. And I don't know if either of you have ever done anything where you've been on a stage, but stage lights are so hot. I used to do theater in high school, and you are sweating buckets. And now Orny's comedy is like so physical. He's running around the stage and waving his arms. So he started getting sweaty, so he starts unbuttoning his shirt. And he mentioned he got like a little catcall. So he did another button, and then another one, and then another one. And his shirt's about halfway open. And he keeps it that way for the rest of his routine. And he finishes up, and he's ready to say his goodbyes. So the MC comes on to you know, see him off. And the MC comes up and he undoes one of his buttons. And then, so Orny takes off his belt. And the guy takes off his shoe. And then out walks Robin Williams in nothing but his boxers. And Orny's immediate thought is, that's why he's famous. That's why he's more famous than me. This guy has an Academy Award. And he's going to walk on stage in his boxers. He's fatter than me. He's hairier than me. But he has no shame. He has no fear. And that makes him more human, and that's why he's famous. And so that was like a turning point for Orny. And he tries to be more fearless on stage. He tries to remember that encounter and be more fearless. And this was, when I read about it, it was an interview in 2009. And if you pay attention, if you look back at interviews with him and things like that, and like you look at his stand-up, like his old stand-up versus his stand-up now, he has definitely gotten a lot more fearless, especially even in the one-on-one. He's still a little awkward, but he's definitely like so much stronger now. And it's so funny that it's because Robin Williams walked on stage in his boxers while Orny was doing a show.
That's so interesting. And comedy is something that my experience with it constantly, with everyone who does stand up that I've ever, you know, either known or, you know, known about, everyone who has a history in, you know, or came from comedy, it's a really dark thing. It's a really, like, a lot of comedians are they're very awkward in person. They're very uncomfortable. They are very dark. A lot of them are mentally ill, not pinning that on Orny himself, but like, It's just such an interesting thing to be drawn to and to be comfortable in that circumstance and comfortable interacting on stage, with heaps of people and, you know, going back and forth, like riffing with them, but like stepping off stage and being very anxious and things like that. And it's such a common thing with comedians, and it's just such an interesting industry to me that it's like so. I don't know. There's everyone I've heard really talk about it says there's a lot of darkness in it and a lot of personal like anxiety in day-to-day life from stand-up comedians, and that's just always been very interesting to me.
And especially considering that a lot of people, I don't know if they still call him that now that he's bigger, but that he was the most hated comedian for somebody who has to get up in front of people, and I mean, the audience at comedy shows, if they don't like your routine, a lot of the times they're going to let you know it, and they're going to, you know, say stuff to you and boo you off stage. So that can be really scary. But one of my favorite things here, and this kind of throws back to his friendship with Seinfeld, too, is one of like what he says when he's asked why he doesn't just give up on comedy if he is considered the most hated comedian. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. This was in the same interview where he referred to the film as the shadow on his career. He kind of shakes it off. And as a comedian, that's a hard thing to do, to shake off people calling you something like the most hated comedian. But he's gotten to this point where it doesn't faze him anymore, because he had this moment where when they wrapped filming, Jerry Seinfeld came up to him and he said, "You're the real deal. Promise me you'll never stop doing stand-up." And it's just this moment where he realizes that comedians are all the same. They're all cut from the same cloth. And he when he did the film, he was never trying to say, you know, I'm as good as Jerry Seinfeld and I should be getting the same amount of attention and money that Jerry Seinfeld gets. He was just trying to say, you know, as comedians, we're all the same kind of guy. Mm.
And this happens to some people and this doesn't.
Sometimes you're me and sometimes you're him. And so he carries that with him, that thing that Jerry told him at the end, you know, you're the real deal. And, you know, he knows this is what I'm meant to do. And so it's kind of like that one thing that he can hold on to no matter how poorly he does. Like, there was a show he did sometime last year, and he comes out on stage, and it's a pretty large venue. It can fit about 100 to 150 people. There are 30 people there.
Mm.
And he immediately, his heart sank. And he was so, you know, he didn't want to do the show anymore. But he went out and he did it. And it was the most interactive audience he'd ever had at one of his shows.
Mm.
And it just solidified for him and reminded him, this is why I do this. And I remember him posting about it on Facebook and on Twitter. And he was just stunned that this tiny, tiny crowd did more for him than any show he'd ever done.
Mm.
That's amazing, because some people would walk right off stage, you know, like, what's the point? And especially when you're an artist, a lot of this stuff is really personal, and a lot of comedians pull from their everyday lives. And when somebody doesn't appreciate that about your art, that can be really hard to take. And that's why a lot of people give up on that sort of career path. And I think, you know, realizing, I mean, a lot of this stuff I'm just learning for the first time, so I'm kind of processing it as we're talking about it, and realizing that he came from being considered the most hated comedian, which is totally ridiculous to me, because I love him. I love his comedy on Teen Wolf. I loved the stand-up show that we watched, and I can't imagine anybody hating him that much, but to know that some people did, and yet he's still doing his comedy, I think is really telling of, you know, the strength of his personality.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm really glad that he got that show experience that you mentioned. I've heard similar things from both, like, musicians, and I've done, like, about 5 national tours in Australia with an author that I manage who does... he does spoken word events that are kind of a cross between stand-up comedy and life coaching. He kind of tells stories about his life, and sometimes they're funny and sometimes they're super depressing. But he says the same thing about, like, sometimes a small audience is really depressing, or sometimes it's, like, more enriching than anything because you can see how people engage and stuff like that. And, like, it just depends on, you know, how the people are reacting, and sometimes those experiences are the most memorable. So that's really cool that he got that kind of turnaround.
Yeah, and that, like, there's this quote of his that I really love, that he repeats in just about every interview he does where they ask him about his comedy. Mm. And he likes to say that what he does isn't special. It's not what matters in the world. He says that what is special and brave and important is, like, guys who cut open chests and save people and things like that. And he's just doing something that he's passionate about. But he always reiterates, and he always says that even if he's only connecting with a few people, even if it's just that room of 30 people, mm. he's connecting with somebody and he's bringing happiness to somebody, and that's his purpose.
Mm. Yeah. And as I said, like, I don't know, you know, where he's at in his life personally, but, you know, a lot of comedians who get, you know, they feel that way about making other people happy or laughter or feel, you know, cathartic or anything like that. You know, they do it and it's kind of, yeah, the only thing that makes them feel, you know, feel validated as well. Like, that it's, you know, that, you know, being able to either connect with or sort of affect other people like that. And it's something I can't even imagine what it would be like, really. Like, I can't really empathize, like, with what that would even feel like. So, yeah.
Okay, so shall we talk about Takes the Third now?
Yeah, if you wanna go into it.
Okay. So, yeah, we all watched Takes the Third. Danielle, I'm sure you had seen it before us, but Natalie and I had not seen it prior to BiteCon. And so, yeah, we bought the DVDs there, and I just watched it tonight, actually. And I thought it was really good. So let's start with you, Natalie, since you hadn't seen it before either. What did you think of it?
I liked it. I haven't seen, as I said, I haven't seen that much American stand-up. And I don't know if it's like a cultural thing or if it's like, you know, just a personality thing. Because I've seen British comedians who are more similar to this and British comedians who are more similar to other styles. But I've mainly seen British and American comedy. And the ones that I've seen have been incredibly, as I mentioned before, incredibly self-deprecating, incredibly like the... And I love it, but it's depressing. Like, I have cried in the comedy shows that I've been to, not from laughter. I have cried from angst in comedy shows that I've been to. Like Simon Amstel, Russell Brand, Tom Ballard, who's an Australian comedian. Yeah, it's because they're the kind of comedians that basically get up there and spill their guts about their failures and their depression. And that's the kind of comedy that I've always been into, which is kind of weird, if you know what I mean. And some of the comedy that I've seen that isn't like that, like that is just joke into joke into joke about like commentary on other people and on the world, has felt very hollow. And I actually saw a comedian recently who I really liked as a... I'd liked him on panel shows and I'd liked him as hosting things on television. And then I saw his actual live comedy show and I'm like, wow, this is really not good. Like, it's really, it was basically that kind of external joking, but it was really racist and really misogynistic and really like just cheap jokes basically. And it felt very hollow. And I was very, very unimpressed. But what I liked about Orny's show is it didn't feel like that, despite the fact it was not the kind of self-deprecating horror of, you know, of the kind of comedy that I'm used to, which is sounds so terrible, but I don't know, it's just what I have experienced. But his jokes, you know, some of them were about his own experiences and some of them were commentary on the rest of the world, but I liked how he always managed to kind of spin things. The one particular bit that I really liked was the bit where he was talking about, oh, like customer service and having to call, you know, all of these other third world countries in order to, you know, get your stuff fixed. And it was the kind of bit where I understood how if you were not getting him, you would take that as him criticizing their circumstances. But I completely read it as like him mocking America for, you know, oh, you know, fix my stupid little problem when you are, you know, living in slums, basically. Like, and I, you know, there was enough of that kind of self-deprecation or deprecation of his own experience that I felt very strongly about kind of, I don't know, what he was doing in terms of social commentary. And so that kind of thing is what always sticks out to me with comedy. And I really liked that. There were a few, you know, there were a few other bits that I was just laughing stupidly. But yeah, it had enough depth for me to enjoy it when I come from a world of comedy, which is super dark and super personal. And as I said, like given the fact that he is quite uncomfortable off stage and that he has had this history of, you know, uncomfortability with the Seinfeld situation and all of that, I would love to see him do a show that was like that, if you know what I mean, that was like his own, like a narrative of his negative story, basically, because apparently that's the kind of comedy that I get off on. But as I said, I've cried. I don't go to comedy to laugh, apparently. I go to comedy to see people, like, spill their guts on and...
Oh, my God.
Well, I think it's a very healing process for the kind of people that do comedy. And
yeah.
It isn't necessarily for everyone, but I always want to see people gutting themselves open. So I'd like to see some of that from him. But this I liked, despite the fact it's not the kind of comedy that I usually like, because it is external based rather than internal based, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And it's funny that you brought up that part about the customer service, because that was actually my favorite part too. And I think it's sort of like twofold for me. And the main part is that a lot of the times comedians will try to connect to the audience and get them like all pumped up on being American and like,
Is that a thing in America?
Yes, it is.
Oh, no.
It's like, oh, you should speak English and like we should have customer service in the US and it shouldn't be foreign. And a lot of the times they'll do that. And he totally flipped it on its head. And like you said, it was a social commentary rather than trying to connect to the audience, which I think in a way, like, he still was connecting to the audience because it made you think like, oh man, I'm really mad that this person doesn't have an American accent. And yet here I am, like, worried about this tiny little problem when, you know, I have air conditioning and my cat has appetizers and all this other stuff. And I thought that was a really new and sort of unique way to tackle a situation like that. So I was really happy to see that. And yeah, my favorite, the other thing that I really, really like about the comedy as a whole is that he tells a story, and the whole narrative of this show ties in together. At the very end, he's referencing jokes that he made in the very beginning.
The throwback jokes were really good. They were like
perfect.
They were very well done, and they weren't mm-hmm. overdone. And they didn't, and they weren't too close. They were far enough away that you'd forgotten about it, and then the throwback jokes were perfectly placed.
Absolutely perfectly placed. And everything was just written like really intricately. And my favorite comedian of all time is Gabriel Iglesias, and he does the same exact thing. He tells a story, because a lot of comedians, and the reason why I don't like a lot of comedians, is that they just do punchlines, just one after the other. It's funny for 2 seconds, and then you forget about it, and it's done.
That's what this show was like that I saw earlier in the year, that it was a comedian who I expected to really like, and it was literally just bad, racist punchline jokes. And I was just like, we left halfway through, and I was like, I've never
watched that. Oh, my gosh.
George Lopez show.
There was an interval, and this guy was British, and I did not expect this from a British comedian, and I did not expect this from the kind of stuff that he'd done on television. And I was just like, all right. And apparently there was a celebrity there. One of the Monty Python guys was there that night as well, and apparently he walked out at the interval too. So I was like, okay.
Man.
You're like, anyway, my standards are in the right place.
The punchline stuff is – yeah, this was much more narrative than just punchlines, which was a good thing.
It worked so well that way. And yeah, I really loved the whole setup of it and everything. And I just have to say that my favorite joke probably was how it's stupid that the post office wants you to buy insurance.
Oh my God.
For packages that they should be delivering appropriately anyway, because I feel this on a personal level. This is my job. I sell on eBay, and every day I pack up stuff, and I always have to field questions about, oh, you know, this got broken because of the post office, and we pack our packages with like bubble wrap and all this other crazy stuff, and it makes me so angry. And so I just really felt Ornie on that one. And that was my favorite joke. But I also really like the fluffy don't fill up on the salmon joke, because that was just brilliant.
Yeah.
My absolute favorite thing about this whole special is the title and the joke about the Third Amendment. I was an American. I only went to college for 2 years before I dropped out, but I took a lot of my major courses when I was there. And I was an American history major. And I can tell you, I never knew the Third Amendment.
What is it? Yeah. Have we looked it up at all?
It was something about like soldiers, like allowing soldiers.
You do not have to quarter soldiers in times of war, because a huge thing in the American Revolution was the quartering act.
They'd just go in and they'd be like, "Yeah, I get to live in your house now."
In the American Revolution, that's what the British soldiers did. Yeah. So in the Declaration, in the Constitution, they were like, "No,
you have the right
to get rid of that." It was one of the ones that you never really, because we never really have like wartime like that anymore.
Yeah.
And so you just never learn it. And every time I think about it, I'm like, what is the Third Amendment? And I have to, like, rack my brain to remember. And I'm like, I was a history major of American history, no less. And I should know this.
But, man, I love the guy who knew the answer to that because he had been to the show.
Yeah, your whole amendment thing is very confusing to me. And we don't have... I'm just going to say, Australia obviously has a constitution. Like, it has a, you know, version of the Bill of Rights. It has, you know, the stuff that the Australian government deems to be, you know, the rights of man or whatever. But no one goes around shouting it all the time the way you guys do.
And we mostly shout the first and the fifth.
What's the fifth?
The fifth is, it has to do with, people say, I plead the fifth. When they're in court.
Isn't it like a right to remain silent?
Yeah. And so that one you hear a lot, especially in movies and TV.
Yeah.
Because somebody will accuse somebody of something and they'll say, I plead the fifth.
Okay.
And then half the time it's like, you don't even fully understand what the fifth is, but okay.
I also hear a lot of people going on about the right to bear arms, but we won't go into that because I've got in trouble for talking too much about gun control on this show before, so...
Nah, I was wondering, because, I mean, obviously you know a lot about American culture, but I was wondering if you connected with the show, because a lot of it was about, like, American, like, the amendments and, you know, different things in America, and I didn't know if, like, as somebody who lives in Australia, like, obviously you still found it funny,
yeah.
But did you connect to it?
I'm trying to... Well, I'm trying to think if there was any of it that I didn't, if you know what I mean, that I really felt like, oh, I don't get that. I don't think there was any moment that I thought that, but then again, there's some Australian comedy that's really popular worldwide at the moment that I'm constantly like, there's no way that other people are watching this get all the jokes, and I've seen people... watch it, and they've been like, yeah, I find it hilarious. And I'm like, are you finding it funny for the same reason I'm finding it funny? Because I don't think you are. If you know, which, by the way, the comedy I'm talking about, if any of you guys know about it, is Chris Lilley. He did Summer Heights High and basically all of those characters out of that show, Jemay Private School Girl, which you guys might have seen. It depends on what kind of comedy you like. But it's very big worldwide currently, and... every time I see people laughing at it on Twitter and stuff, I'm like, I'm not sure you guys are understanding it in the same parts that I'm understanding it. But you're clearly getting something out of it, so that's cool. So there might have been parts of this that I don't know that I didn't understand, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Danielle, yeah, so what else did you like about the special? I mean, it was a television special, right? Like, and I watched a little bit of the special features of backstage, and I mean, when was this done? Because he was kind of like, this was a, you know, a Comedy Central special, you know, he hadn't had that much publicity before, and all of that kind of stuff. So when was this exactly, do you happen to know?
I want to say it was a few years ago. I vaguely remember it. Yeah, I was going to say 2010. I vaguely remember it airing. That was because that was around the time when I was just starting college.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister was plugging me into a lot of like Saturday Night Live comedians and things like that. And so I was, you know, like I was vaguely aware of him. I'd seen the movie Comedian because I'm like weirdly a Jerry Seinfeld fan. I've never watched the show, but I like him as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh, a documentary about his comedy. I'll watch this. So I was aware of Orny Adams, and I vaguely remember his special airing, and I remember having it on as, like, background noise when it first aired. And mm-hmm. then I went back and watched it again later, and I was like, oh, this is that thing that I was watching.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a few years old, but it's... Comedy Central specials used to be... They're not as big as they used to be, I don't think. These days there are more people like Kevin Hart and George Lopez and, you know, already established people. But they used to be people like Orny Adams and things like that. Like, John Mulaney used to do stand-up specials all the time before anybody really knew his name. And that's kind of what this one was. For me, like, I remember it because it was when I was first getting into stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people who, like, will go and watch it will be like, when was this? Why don't I remember this? Because they're used to what Comedy Central specials today are, which is...
People who are already celebrities, yeah.
Yeah. My definite favorite joke in the show, though, that I actually, like, seriously related to was when he talks about not wanting to have kids, and he goes on to talk about helping them with schoolwork. Uh-huh. I have a little sister that I'm 13 years older than.
Yeah.
So she's just about to turn 9, and she'll ask for help on her homework, and she's in second grade, and I'll look at her homework, and I'll read the question about 17 times before I finally say, I'm sorry, Julia, I don't know what this is asking you. And I feel like that was, like, a really subtle, backhanded comment about the American education system, because we learn these things, but do we remember them? Because nobody cares if we remember them. So you kind of just, like how he made the joke about what's a pronoun, and he was like, a professional noun, duh. And so, like, I remember my little sister had these, like, she had to write a word problem for math. And I was like, well, you can't write a word problem to have that answer. That doesn't make any sense. And we couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure it out. My 23-year-old sister couldn't figure it out. My 48-year-old mother couldn't figure it out. And we were like, Julia, you're just going to have to go to school and tell Miss Kirsch that there's no answer to this. And so when he made that joke, and every time I watch the special, because I've seen it multiple times now, every time it hits that joke, I'm like, oh my God, I feel this on a spiritual level.
I'm trying to think if there was anything else we wanted to talk about within the special. I'm sure there's lots we could go and rehash every joke, but I don't have a photographic memory, so I don't know. But yeah, the slight social commentary stuck out to me, as I said, which I really liked, because if your comedians are apparently all about revving people up about being American, perhaps they don't take social commentary, like being fed social commentary, that well. So I like that he managed to slip that in there. As I said, a lot of British commentary is super critical. It's super, super critical. So, and very, like, left wing. I don't think there's any such thing as a right wing comedian, whereas in America, there definitely seems to be right wing sort of based comedy, if you know what I mean. And I like that he managed to kind of, yeah, mix that up a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. Like, it was cool. I mean, he's still doing comedy shows, obviously, as in between working on Teen Wolf. He didn't do one at BikeCon this year, but they were maybe trying to get him to do one next year, possibly, like as a late night event as part of the convention. Is that something that, you know, you'd like to see at, you know, do you think he would do a set specifically about Teen Wolf or something like that? Or like
oh man, that would be awesome. Yeah. I was sad that he didn't do it this year. I really hope that he does it next year, because I mean, even if it's something that, like, you have to pay for outside of BikeCon, like it's an additional show that's just kind of in the same place. Yeah, I would totally do that, because I would love to see him live, and I think it would be really interesting to have him do a show to an audience of people who not only know his stand-up at this point, because I'm sure quite a few people have looked into it after him being on Teen Wolf, but also people who know Teen Wolf and know about Coach, and I just think he would have a lot of really cool things to say. It would be a unique show.
Yeah. Danielle, have you seen him perform recently, like since, you know, in the last year or so?
No, I was actually supposed to go to one of his more recent California shows, but I had something else come up and I couldn't make it. But I go on his website like once a week to see if he's added any dates near me that I can go to, because I have been trying for months to get to one. But I would love to see him do one at BikeCon. And I definitely think it would be like a really popular event if they had it. It'd be interesting because I would be interested at least, because comedy is a weird medium, you know, people have different tastes of humor.
Mm.
And I think it'd be interesting mainly because BikeCon is all Tumblr people, and, you know, Tumblr culture is so forward thinking these days.
Yeah.
I personally it'd be like a science experiment for me.
Yeah.
I would love to see how they react to this actually in their face for real.
Yeah. As that's kind of something that I kind of vibed from the DVD, that like if there'd been certain kind of subsects of people at that show, that they may not have taken it that well, because mm-hmm. because Tumblr, Tumblr culture is so focused on like the only kind of, I think the only kind of humor they really like sometimes is like wit and bad puns and basically I'm not saying that off taste humor should be excused, but I think that they might have missed the stuff that I mentioned as social commentary. I think they may have missed the fact that it was attempting to be social commentary, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. Like, I don't really know, what his regular audiences are like, how young they are, what kind of culture, surrounds them. I'm also curious about, I don't know, since he's been on Teen Wolf, whether he plays any of that into the show. Not, a set as coach or anything, but whether he's so I do this television and this thing happened on there, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
If he keeps it completely separate and doesn't mention that in the comedy sets. So that's something I'm curious about. I don't know if anyone knows the answer to that.
If he did that, I think that would be awesome. And, his solo panel at BiteCon brought the house down. People loved him, and I feel like what he was talking about there, even though it was centered a lot on Teen Wolf, he also did talk about his relationship with stand-up and some of his experiences there, and people were still really into it, so I think a show would do really well.
Yeah. Do we want to read some tweets, or what?
Yeah.
Danielle, do you have any closing remarks, though, before we finish up and read tweet feedback?
That's a dangerous window to open.
Danielle did have a lot of thoughts at BiteCon about things in panels.
I think I asked a question in every single
panel.
I think you did. The Felicia and Haley one, because I overslept.
Oh no. But you saw them in our podcast.
Yeah. But anybody who's listening to this that didn't go to BiteCon and hasn't seen Orny live, the thing I want you to take away from all of this is that he is the most genuine person you could ever meet. I spent most of Friday at BiteCon with him, weirdly, because I was in the vendor's room when he was setting up, and we were talking for about an hour, and then there was his panel, and I asked a question, and we did a little back and forth, and then I did the photo op and then the autograph. So a lot of my day was spent with him, and a lot of it was just genuine surprise that anybody cared to see him. And when I explained to him that he was the reason I started watching Teen Wolf.
So you knew him, you definitely knew him before that. I wasn't sure whether you knew him, hardcore knew him before the show.
I knew who he was, and I remembered his comedy, and I wasn't paying attention to the cast listing, and then he came on screen, and I was like, I know this guy, and he's hilarious, so I'm going to keep going. And then I looked him up after a few episodes, and I was like, yeah, he's that guy. But he was so shocked that he was the reason that I watched this show. And he genuinely... Everything that he said that was not meant as a joke was so sincere. And he is the nicest person. I met Tyler Posey at BiteCon, and I will honestly say Orny Adams was sweeter to me. And that's not to say that Tyler Posey isn't the sweetest person in the world, because he is a little ball of sunshine. But it was just, you don't expect it because I've met comedians before, and I've met various celebrities when I used to live in LA, and you don't expect it from a comedian. You expect it to be all witty one-liners.
I think that comedy and being a comedian, unless your comedy is based, actually not even unless, sometimes even in addition to, unless your comedy is based in utter self-deprecation, the persona of a comedian is very arrogant, very, very arrogant. And Orny definitely has that, in a role and on stage and, when he's blasting people and stuff like that.
Right.
But it is part of being a comedian. And as I said, I've even the comedians that I have experienced that are completely like, gut themselves open are still, like, openly, they're like, yeah, I'm a narcissist, this is why I do this kind of thing. Like, and it's, yeah, there's definitely a, you know, this air of arrogance that is the impression of a comedian. But Orny was very obviously personable. He was, like, selling his own T-shirts and stuff and you know, hanging out and, you know, having fun, like, invading other people's panels. And, like, when we met him to our little signing that we got for the giveaway, he just – he was sort of going out of his way to kind of make a good experience. He broke a framed – set of instructions for the hotel, like, escape route off the wall in order to, like, frame our postcard and take, like, promotional photos with it. It was very, very strange.
But highlight. That was definitely a highlight for me of, like, the entire
weekend. Like, what is he doing? Why is this happening? He's like, no, I've got to make it cooler than this. We're going to do this. And I was just like, okay. But, yeah, he made a very good effort. And I think that something is interesting as well, like, that, you know, someone coming from comedy and someone who's like an, you know, an adult, you know, he's a he's not a, you know, an our generation actor. He's an, you know, he's an adult now or whatever. They may, you know, those kind of people are kind of always hit and miss with fandom, like with fandom culture. And while I don't know how involved he is with, you know, actual fandom culture in terms of understanding how fandom operates, like his fandom interactions and like Twitter and like how he was at ByteCon and like in the panels and kind of jumping on board with like the fan fiction panel and everything like that was very like very cool. So that was that was really cool. And I think was that the first con that he went to?
Yes. It wasn't just the first one he went to. It was the first one he was invited to.
No. How has he not been like a wanted guest at cons?
I have no idea. He is now.
Like, he clearly has the skill set to carry a panel, if you know what I mean. Like, people shouldn't be like, "Oh, I want so-and-so, because they're, like, a popular actor." They should be hiring the people who have the talent to carry a live panel.
And I think that speaks a lot to what ByteCon was as a whole.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the conventions, they are these big corporations.
Yeah.
And so they want the cash cows. And the fans are like, but we love side character B, too.
Yeah.
You know? And
like
that's why it's so great. This was his first.
Yeah, Orny, Edie, and the twins, all of them would be, like, the first people I would book for a con, if I was booking a con, because all of them just, they, like, could... Tyler Posey also made a fantastic experience for everyone there, but, like, I would take all of them over Dylan, for example. Not that I don't love Dylan, but I think that he's very anxious and possibly a little bit uncomfortable about fandom. And so right. I would take all of them... like, and the experience that they create for fans and the way that they sort of were enthused about the weekend as, like, ideal kind of guests that you want at con, and the kind of people that will, from now on, like, from the people that saw them, will have, like, very, very loyal fan base who, like, want to see them and interact with them and stuff. So,
yeah.
Karen, what else?
I think if anybody's listening to this and hasn't seen any of his comedy yet, or invested in, you know, following him on Twitter and kind of learning about him as a person, if this hasn't convinced you, I don't know what will, because it's obvious that he is a really genuine person, and he's also hilariously funny. And I think that, you know, there are some comedians out there that, yeah, they're funny, but I don't necessarily like them as people, because you're right, like, a lot of the times they are very narcissistic, and it's just, like, their personalities don't really mesh with, like, trying to meet them on a human level, whereas, like, Orny is the type of person that you could honestly hang out with, and it would be a really cool and fun experience. And so I think, like, if you're hesitant, you're like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to like this guy, give it a try, because I think his comedy is really similar to Coach on the show. It's very loud, and it's just, it's funny, and it's kind of awkward, and it's just one of those things that I think that a lot of people will really like if they just give it a chance.
Yeah. And I'm so impressed constantly, as we said, with the nuances of Coach, from the shouting craziness to, like, you know, the genuinely brilliant moments. And I think that, you know, is obviously very much down to him. Like, he said at ByteCon, he was like, you know, someone was like, oh, do you do any improv? He was like, well, I'm told there's a script. And so, you know, which was great. But yeah, I don't know. It's, I think that he is, you know, a fan favorite for a reason, and that, you know, yeah, it's a really, really good thing. And he has a lot to offer the fandom, and more conventions should definitely have him, and then have like his own event. If he, you know, wants to do that and all of that kind of thing. And we've got some nice tweets from people as well that are big fans of the, you know, the coach and of Orny. So who wants to read out some tweets?
Oh, let's just, we'll take it in turns. I'll take the first one.
Okay.
This is from Miss Penny Crumb. These are all from Twitter, by the way. And she says, Coach could have been such a flat one-off character, but Orny turned him into a fan favorite that says it all. And I completely agree with that because, like I said, with the movie, Coach was there for the comedic relief. He was kind of
negative and gross. Like,
yeah, and I mean, it was okay. Like, he served his purpose and it was fine, but they decided to do something a little bit deeper and more human with the coach on the show. And I don't think everybody could pull that off. I don't think everybody can do comedy on such a high level, but also bring it down to the drama and actually, like, having Coach connect with other characters. Because it's obvious he does care about the kids that he teaches and coaches. And so I think that, yeah, he's turned into a fan favorite for that very reason.
Yeah. Fictional Fandom said, I love how the coach hates Greenberg. Put your hand down, Greenberg. We all know you did last night's reading. And yes, the Greenberg invention is the fact that it's still not old, if you know what I mean. Like, the fact that that joke is still not old says a lot, I think, as well. And it's fantastic. So I'd like to see, you know, or not see, more Greenberg. He already signed a bunch of cards for us. One of them is in our giveaway. We have a giveaway that is all of the lacrosse players and an Orny coach signature as well. And I believe he wrote Greenberg sucks on it, or at least he did on a few of the cards he signed for us. So yeah, that would be fun to see more Greenberg. I don't know. Do you guys ever want to see Greenberg?
I do.
Maybe in like the last episode ever or something.
Yeah, the one edition that Greenberg is portrayed by Michael J. Fox.
Oh my God.
I will settle for Jason Bateman, but it should be Michael J. Fox.
He's a little bit old to be sitting in those classes, but Jesus.
No, but that would be so perfect, though. Oh, like, he keeps flunking, and he's just there
so
forever.
Good. Okay. The dream. The dream. All right.
I mean, it might just be born out of the fact that Michael J. Fox is, like, my number one, but I think it should be him.
What, your number one human ever?
Yeah, just ever.
Yeah, do you want to read the next one?
Yeah, Expelliarmus says, I love Orny Adams and Coach more than Dylan O'Brien loves Chicken McNuggets and the Mets. That's a lot of love. And there's a little winky face.
It is.
So, that Orny, is so you can interpret that how you want.
Well,
I
get
it. It's an impression.
Okay, this next one is from Jimmy, and I'm going to murder your Twitter handle, but I will try it anyway. It's at Perry... Korea? I don't know.
Harry Sharia? Yeah, something.
Sharia? I don't know. Okay, he says, I love Coach because of how much he cares about his team, and I love Orny because of how well he portrays Coach. Pretty much what we've been saying, and we exactly agree.
And then Kristen Kranz, who is our Hypeville pal, has said, I'm just going to leave this here, my favorites, and it's... basically, I think from our Teen Wolf Takeover month, or it might have just been a random article, but I'm pretty sure it was Teen Wolf Takeover, a hyperbole article of Teen Wolf quotes, the Coach Finstock edition, so all of the favorite quotes from his time on the show, or at least in the first couple of seasons. Do we want to read a couple of those out loud at all? Like one or two, Karen?
Yeah, you can if you want, and... I was just planning on having it linked in the description so people can find that again as well.
Back, we got a when we were trying to make Teen Wolf happen on Hyperbole, which I think we did successfully. It was, oh, this was in the beginning of season 3. What?
Are you laughing at me, Didio?
I was laughing at trying to make Teen Wolf happen.
What did you say, Karen?
Oh, I didn't say anything. I just laughed because... Teen Wolf on Hyperball got way out of control, and I love every second of it.
Yeah, it did. I can't believe how much no one cared when we started forcing it on people.
I know, and you and I were just like, no, this is the best show. And yeah. Now, like, probably the majority of the staff has at least tried it, if not watches it regularly, and it's the best thing ever.
Oh, God, this one was good. I'm just going to read one or two, but when I think it was when Styles had the bag of chains in the locker room, and he just says, part of me wants to ask, the other part says knowing will be more disturbing than anything I could ever imagine, which was a beautiful moment that I'm now reminiscing over. And let's just find one more good one before we go. Oh, wow, this one was speaking about our good friend Greenberg. Anybody see Isaac Leahy, you go immediately... tell the principal, get a teacher, or you call me. Except for you, Greenberg. Don't even call me. I'm not kidding. You shouldn't even have my number. And, yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, he's very prejudiced against Greenberg, but I always liked this moment. Every moment where there's a crisis in the school and Coach handles it like a really awesome teacher, I, like, punch the air. Aside from the Greenberg hate, which is funny in its own thing. But, like, the way he always is when there's a problem and, like, he's very responsible and good teacher, and despite the fact that he yells crazy things, I think that's another little aspect of Teen Wolf that we like, where basically, you know, I like to say everything on Teen Wolf is as realistic as it possibly could be, despite the fact that there are supernatural goings on, if you know what I mean. Like, the way that people talk and act is really legit, and Coach, you know, as a teacher, is a big part of that for me, so I always love that. But, yeah, there's been many other great ones in season three. That was back, that article's from last year, but, you know, you can always talk to us about Coach and your favorite quotes if you want to.
Definitely. So I guess next is our non sequitur question, and we're throwing this one to Danielle. So Danielle, yeah. What do you have for us?
Okay. I'm just remembering the conversation we were having before we started, you know, this, where you, Natalie, were trying to put Bucky, your little action figure Bucky, into a kneeling position.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So my question
that
would
sounds
be...
really sexual, by the way. I was trying to make him do the one kneel back, like one foot on the ground, one kneel back with the arm down in between the legs. Like, not like a kneeling blowjob position. Just saying. Anyway.
Okay. Oh, God, I wish that could be the name of this episode, but I know it can't.
Okay.
So my question is, what is the strangest thing somebody has walked in on you doing?
Oh, God. Falling off my bed? Like, one time someone came in, and as I was, like, it was really, really, it was, like, in the middle of a really bad heat wave, and I was, like, not wanting to move, and I was, like, lying spread-eagled on my bed, but trying to, like, inch over, and this is when I just had, like, a single bed, like, a twin bed, and I was trying to, like, inch over to reach something, and I fell off, so there was that. I'm trying to think if there was anything, like, really, like, this isn't what it looks like kind of thing, but, I don't know.
Oh, man. I wish I had time to prepare for this one, because I'm sure I have some fantastic stories, and I cannot think of any right now.
On a regular basis, it'll be, like, cleaning while wearing something weird. Like, I will have found, like, a ribbon or a hat while tidying and just put it on instead of putting it away, if you know what I mean. So that mm-hmm. would be something occasionally. But I don't know, Karen, I wish someone had walked on you swishing things with the sickle today.
I'm glad that nobody did, because they might have gotten hurt. In case anybody doesn't follow me on Twitter, I found a sickle, and I was pretending that I was part of The Walking Dead and I was killing zombies. And I'm not joking, like, I spent a good 10 minutes, like, attacking styrofoam blocks with this thing. Like, I was having a lot of fun. I was supposed to be working, but I was not. I was killing imaginary zombies instead. But nobody walked in on me doing that. I have a feeling, like, my best friend and I, we're like sisters. We're super, super close, and we've probably, like, been fighting before and wrestling and, like, somebody to walk in and, like, one of us is pinning down the other or something, and that can be kind of awkward sometimes. you know, the only other thing that I can really think of is, like, scrolling through Tumblr.
Oh, my God, yeah.
When you're a fandom person, like, you don't bat your eyelashes at anything, and you're just like, oh, okay, there's some, you know, basically, like, naked men on my dashboard right now, and you just scroll on by and it doesn't matter. But, like, when your mom walks into the room, you need to, like, minimize that as quickly as you can.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other day, I think Donya and Karen, I'm not going to say walked in, they digitally walked in on Brooke and I having a very, very intense conversation about fictional incest. So that was, you know, if you're going to count that as walked in. We were talking about, it came up because Mason Dye, who's on the Teen Wolf now, is, he's also the lead in the remake of Flowers in the Attic, but... Anyway, it went to some places and they were like, wow, well, this is happening. And I think that happens quite often. Like, people will jump into our chat group for the podcast and be like, what the hell is this conversation? Like, what is going on right now? So digitally, people have walked in on some pretty weird things. How about you, though, Danielle?
When I like a movie, I watch it so many times that I know the entire script backwards and forwards.
Okay, yeah.
For example, I could recite the entire speech that Idris Elba gives in Pacific Rim.
I knew this was going to be about Pacific Rim.
I haven't seen it yet. I have it downloaded, and I really want to watch it. I was going to watch it at BiteCon because they had it in the green room, and people were sitting down to watch it, but then I had to go, like, do panels and, like, not... Yeah, I was like, oh, you guys just get to sit here because you only have one panel all day. I have to go and be there for all of them, so I can't sit here and watch Pacific Rim. But yeah.
So the weirdest thing was I was watching Lord of the Rings Return of the King.
Mm-hmm.
And I was downstairs at my house, and everybody was, you know, just off in their rooms. And it was pretty late, so I figured that the only person who would come downstairs is my cousin. And it was at the part where Aragorn is giving his big speech to the troops when they're marching on Mordor.
Oh, good. Yeah. And you were just saying it aloud.
Not just saying it. I was standing.
Oh, my God.
And, like, full on.
You were presenting it.
Yeah. I was doing my best imitation.
It's amazing.
And I was, like, fully into this. And my cousin just goes, what are you doing?
That's fantastic. That is absolutely fantastic.
Instead of freaking out, I turned and I treated her like she was the army. Directed the entire speech to her.
Oh my God. You're my hero. Like,
I've definitely done something similar with, like, the wand scene in the first Harry Potter movie. Like... I don't know why, but I was obsessed with that and the way that Ollivander, like, delivered all of his lines.
A creep. Anyway.
Oh, no. He's amazing.
He's kind of semi-evil. You know that, right? Like,
well,
he's not evil, but he's not... I don't think he's super anti-Voldemort, is what I'm saying.
He's a survivalist, okay?
Okay, whatever.
You can't blame him for that.
All right, fine.
Anyway. I've definitely given speeches before trying to recite movie lines.
Oh, my God. Well, that's good. You guys, yeah. I don't think I have done that. There are many movies that I can quote along with, but I'm not sure if I've performed them.
I do it daily.
I need to witness this at some point. So, yeah. But anyway... Thank you very much for coming and teaching us about Orny Adams.
Oh, you're welcome. My concern is that he's going to listen to this and be like, who is this freak that knows my whole life?
Oh, my God.
And then if he looks me up, he'll be like, I met her. I remember her.
Well, maybe we won't push it too hard or something. We won't promo it. No. If he does listen to it, you know, hi, Orny Adams. Congratulations. Orny. We're big fans. Like, you know. It's good. It's all good. But yeah, no, but thank you, though, for taking the time. And hopefully we'll see more of Coach next season. That, you know, will be fun. And perhaps we'll see Danielle next season too. And then maybe you guys in the Midwest will see Karen next week. Karen?
What was that? Was that my intro music?
That was your drum roll intro, yeah.
Okay, all right, cool. Yeah, so Indie PopCon is going to be next week. It starts on Friday the 30th, goes till Saturday and Sunday. And Kiahu is going to be there. Yay, Kiahu. We love Kiahu. Yeah. And he's going to be doing a panel with us, which is really exciting. So I guess if you guys have any questions, send them our way. I'll have one of the girls reblog our big questionnaire thing on Tumblr again, because we're always looking to have questions in case we can interview somebody.
Yeah, like
somebody.
A stockpile, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so that's always really useful. Also, we're going to be at the... We're going to have a vendors table at Indie PopCon as well, and Courtney, God bless her, is making a million buttons for us to sell there, and they're really awesome.
Yeah.
We've come up with some really exciting designs.
We've got some ones that are, like... for fandoms, not just Teen Wolf. We've got a Hyperball specific button, and we made a few for like just some popular fandoms currently. I art designed two of them, just saying. And then I sent my ideas to Donya, and Donya made them into reality because I can't actually make anything creative. But one's a super depressing Winter Soldier one, and one is a Hannibal one.
Really popular.
As soon as I came up with the idea, and then she made it, and I'm like, yeah, this is literally what's in my brain, and it's gonna be perfect. But I want, like, you, Karen, I need you to save me some of those buttons. I need you to save me like two or three of the Winter Soldier and Hannibal ones, or like pay Courtney to make me a few, buy a few from Courtney for me or something. Like, I want to see all the buttons, but I actually need physical ones of the Hannibal one. I'll take a physical one of all of them, but I need a couple of the Hannibal and a couple of the Winter Soldier ones.
I'm already like, God, I really want like one of each. I'm going to have to pay her for those because it's really not fair just to take them.
Yeah.
So yeah. But if you guys do go to Indie PopCon, please stop by our table. Even if you don't buy anything, that's totally fine. We get that. Not everybody can drop money at these things after spending it on the convention itself. So that's cool. But please come say hi to us. Let us know that you listen to the podcast. We get really excited whenever we can meet anybody like in real life. Like, once I realized who Danielle was, I got really excited every time I saw her and kind of didn't leave her alone all of BiteCon and was really happy to hang out with her. So,
yeah,
we really appreciate that. So please come say hi. There's going to be a bunch of us there. Courtney, Danya, and I from the podcast will be there, but also some hypeable people. You guys have heard Kristen on the podcast before. She'll be there. And also Ariana will be there. And then a different Danielle will be there, who I got to watch Teen Wolf, and she is getting through 3B right now, and she will be on a podcast at some point, so you guys will hear her.
And this Danielle that's joining us today, you guys may recall, it said that she's on our first episode, but if it sticks out in your brain, she was the person that had a great story about meeting Kiahu at a nerdy-ass rocket launch in her town. And her icon picture is still that lovely picture that made us go, you need to explain this right now. So, unfortunately they will not be reunited at Indie PopCon, but perhaps someday.
We were at BiteCon.
Yes, you were at BiteCon, which is fun. But,
also,
yeah, do you have a question for Kiahu, Danielle?
At BiteCon I asked him about space. And his answer was really funny, because he was a kid and he wanted to get away from his family. So that's why he was interested in space. It was like he had no concept of the rest of the world, is what he said. I guess he seems to be like a really big traveler.
Mm.
So if you guys get the chance, ask him like, what's the best place he's traveled to that's not like a huge destination?
Mm. Like a small place that he's discovered.
Like, like just some place he stumbled upon in his travels. That's
Missoula,
like
Montana, bro. That's my answer to that question. just in case anyone cares at all.
But yeah, that's a really good question. No, that's good. That's good. I also, before we go, I just want to give a shout out because Daunt is also going to be at Indie PopCon, mm-hmm. and she will also have a vendor table. So, honestly, save your money and buy her stuff because
is she going to be amazing. Next to you?
We're hoping that they can put us together. That would be really cool because yeah. we love Daunt.
The panel with Kyahu is going to be recorded and released yes. on this podcast, yes?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
So that will be an episode that will come out before season 4 starts for you guys as well.
Yes, it will. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, and so we'll definitely have that one. We might have another one as well that will be a bit of a special one. That's not 100% definitely sure, but I'm pretty sure it will be. And then we'll have a season 4 roundup as well. So we'll actually have a few. We'll have to make time to fit them all in because we've got about a month to go till Teen Wolf 4 premieres. Obviously, the live podcast from Indie Pop will be one, and we'll have our season 4 spoiler roundup. And if we can sneak you in another one as well, we will try to do so, if you guys even care. You know, you might be sick of us by now, whatever. We'll just go. Sorry, I just got really negative and sad for some reason. But no, yeah, we will try and sneak you in something else good, which I'm working on currently. But yeah, so unless anyone has anything else to say, we shall head off now and leave you to go and obtain Orny Adams Takes the Third DVD and watch it, or tell us what you think of this episode. So yeah, I guess everyone can say bye. So bye-bye.
Bye, guys. Bye.
Hey, it's Orny Adams, coach on Teen Wolf, and you're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast. Unless you're here by mistake and you thought you were listening to something else, and then you can just shut it. I'm seriously, shut it! Stupid, how do you shut this off? Shut it off! Sick of this stupid podcast.
You may have seen on Twitter, I started following Mark Ruffalo on Tumblr. His Tumblr is I don't think he understands what he's doing. But someone just said he's answering a lot of asks, and someone was like, I love how you have a Tumblr, Mark. I seriously love you and your acting. The day you stop acting will be the day me, along with many of your fans, will dread. Love you so much and don't forget it. And he replied saying, I am digging the freedom of this platform. It feels full of possibility. No, Mark Ruffalo. No. No, no. No. It's my new favorite thing. I just can't. Oh, Mark Ruffalo. I'm going to go off your Tumblr now because I'm embarrassed for you.
Just scrolling down through it.
Huh?
Picture of him and Robert Downey Jr. makes me so happy.
Yeah, it's very cute. But he's so bad at Tumblr.
I kind of just hope that he stays really bad at it, though.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
To get really good at it.
Yeah, and he's definitely using it like a confused hipster right now, as opposed to like someone who knows a lot about fandom. And I think that's probably a good thing. Are we allowed to post iTunes songs on here, or is that illegal?
No, my favorite is how he says, if it's illegal, it's probably double illegal for me.
I can't handle it. I'm closing it. It's so dumb and cute. Okay.